First, when then-candidate Donald Trump announced he was running for president 4 years ago, he talked about a vision of America that was kind of bleak.
Sadly, the American dream is dead. But if I get elected president, I will bring it back bigger and better and stronger than ever before.
For a lot of Americans, that vision was exactly right, reflecting some of the huge economic and cultural shifts they'd witnessed in their own towns and cities. In his new book, our next guest took a closer look at what's driving that divide and says it's about more than just low wages and jobs going overseas. Tim Carney is the commentary editor for the Washington Examiner and a visiting fellow at the American Enterprise Institute. He's the author of multiple books. His latest is called Alienated America, Why Some Places Thrive While Others Collapse. Tim, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
What set you out on this journey, and you were literally journeying, to find out why some communities did well, others did poorly?
Well, it was a lot of it was Donald Trump. Seeing him proclaim the American dream was dead and seeing that message resonate so widely and, you know, him rocket to the top of the Republican primary polls right away in mid-2015, it made it clear to me that, you know, we needed a better explanation of why this view held so widely while so many broader indicators, stock market, unemployment, those sort of things were improving. A lot of people had explanations, and I went out to find what I thought was, I went out to find my own explanation in part because I figured it had to be a local question. It couldn't be something just nationwide. There were places where the American dream was alive and well and places where it seemed dead. And that's what I was trying to figure out in Alienated America.
And the obvious answer would seem to be it's economics. It's places that have lost factories, that have had economic hardship. You say that's only part of the story. You saw something deeper. What did you start to find?
That's right. Often the closing factory is a first domino, but it's not the whole story, and you're skipping a step if you stop there. The cover of the book is a shuttered church, not a shuttered factory. And that's because what distinguishes the places that have good outcomes and where Donald Trump didn't have resonance in the early Republican primaries from the places with bad outcomes and where people came out of the woodwork to support Trump, people who had never been involved in elections, standing in line, going to caucuses in Iowa. What distinguished those two classes of places wasn't really income. It wasn't really exposure to competition with China. It wasn't those factors. It was the strength of community institutions. And here we're talking about bowling leagues. We're talking about public schools. But most importantly, for the middle class in middle America, civil society community has meant church. And where that has collapsed, that's where you saw the worst outcomes. And that's frankly where you saw the strongest support for Donald Trump in those early Republican primaries.
Tim, we're in Wisconsin, so I want to detour to one of the communities you focus on in your book, Oostburg, Wisconsin. Tell us the story of that community and how it fits into what you're talking about.
So I ended up in Oostburg because of what I had noticed in Iowa. Donald Trump's two worst counties in Iowa were Sioux County and Lyon County, and he also did really poorly in Marion County. These are the counties with the highest Dutch population. I'm an Irish Catholic from New York, so where I came from, white people were either Irish or Italian. So this idea of Dutch ethnicity really appealed to me, and it was interesting. And then in western Michigan, which I'm in Grand Rapids, about to speak at Calvin College, and here Donald Trump did really poorly in western Michigan. Now, one thing about these are very, I'm talking about the primaries here, but these are very conservative, very Christian places, these Dutch towns, Dutch counties in Michigan and Iowa. So I picked the most Dutch place in Wisconsin ahead of the Wisconsin primaries, and that was the village of Oostburg, about 2,000 people in Sheboygan County. And sure enough, Oostburg, which has been called by some political pundits the most conservative place in Wisconsin, Donald Trump bombed in the Republican primaries there. Ted Cruz cleaned up, and Trump got a lowly 15 or 16%. So what was it about the Dutch that were rejecting Trump? And the answer, I argue throughout Alienated America, is that the community is really strong in these various places, Western Michigan, Sioux County, Oostburg, these Dutch places. It's not their ethnicity so much. It's that they have these really strong Christian Reformed churches that build a strong sense of duty to one's neighbor, strong sense of social trust. So the American dream is alive and well in these places. And while a lot of rural America, it's not so strong. And that was Trump's appeal early on.
Talking to Tim Carney about his new book, Alienated America, Why Some Places Thrive While Others Collapse. Tim, talk about that wider idea of civil society, that third place between our work and our home. Why has it been disappearing? Not just the church, as you say, but in a lot of other ways, too.
That's right. And so Robert Putnam, you'll remember, wrote Bowling Alone 20 years ago, charting this decline. And it's been declining for everybody, and it's been declining more among the working class. And that's one of the key points that I'm trying to drive home here, that a lot of the shape of modernity is towards both centralization and hyper-individualism. Now, these sound like opposites, but I argue they're the same, different sides of the same coin. And that's what Alexis de Tocqueville argued in Democracy in America 200 years ago. Centralization of our attention and of government have led to an erosion of things on the local level, whether it's local government, a local school board, a local parish, a swim club, the Knights of Columbus, those sorts of institutions. People have pulled away from them, and technology is a huge factor in this. Just our televisions, our homes, our air conditioning, our iPhones, our social media draws people away. Those are our two major factors, and again, you see sort of the hyper-individualism, people wanting to... Fewer people, especially young people, want to belong to something because belonging to something can seem like a sacrifice of your own self-determination. Oh, well, I'm going to show up when I want to show up and not show up when I don't feel like it. And that's not the same as belonging to a thing, whether it be a church or a club or a PTA. Those are things that you wed yourself to, and they're sticky, and you can't necessarily extract yourself immediately and neatly. And I think a lot of the modern mindset is towards extracting yourself, and especially among the middle class and the working class, one of the results is this alienation and a lot of bad life outcomes, whether it's dropping out of high school, teenage pregnancy, getting on disability, getting on drugs. All of those things are correlated with alienation and with the erosion of these institutions.
You write some about, and a lot of people have been talking about this, have and have not communities. We have some cities and regions and counties doing really well economically. And one problem you see is that to the extent we have geographic mobility in the country, it might be people moving from the have not areas to the have areas and taking a big talent pool with them, the people who might have been the leader in the PTA, say.
That's exactly right. And so this is... one of the things that I talked about, the first domino of the factory closing. Factory closes in a small Midwestern town. What happens? The parents who are most assertive, most aware of what's going on, are the first ones to get up and move to someplace else where there's more promise. So what happens to the people left behind? Now they just lost their PTA dad and their girls' basketball coach, and that this is what's happening in towns around the country. So we have less geographic segregation by race in America than we did 50 years ago. We have more geographic segregation by education level and by income. And so one of the things that happens is the smaller towns are left with less skill, with less ambition, as a lot of people are getting up and moving out. And so then you see how the dominoes start to fall. In the places that maybe have one church and one coffee shop and one bowling alley, those things can pretty quickly, if one of them shuts down, people have less of an ability to connect with their neighbors. They have less of a safety net. And if you're tightly knit in these things, you know that when you were sick, the people who brought you family, who brought you meals, they were from your work, from your church, from your local pub. They were from these institutions. If you're not as connected to those institutions, it's easier for your life to fall apart, and it's easier for these towns to crumble. And that's why I talk about the domino theory. Is a lot of times when something starts to go wrong this day and age, you see the most active, aggressive, skilled people get up and go somewhere else, and they're all congregating in a few big cities, and a lot of rural America is left without people who are going to run these local institutions.
We're talking to Tim Carney from the Washington Examiner about his new book, Alienated America, Why Some Places Thrive While Others Collapse. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Does this sound like your community? Have you seen the churches close, the local groups, the PTA start to collapse, the local stores? Or are you living in a town or city that's growing? What do you think makes the difference? And do you feel that sense of community in your town where you have the people who will bring you food when somebody's sick in your family, or where you do that for them? What drives you to do that? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We pick up our conversation now about what's driving the decline of some communities and the growth and prospering of others. Tim Carney is with us. His new book is Alienated America, Why Some Places Thrive While Others Collapse. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What changes have you seen in the community you live in over the years? Have they been for the better, for the worse? Does it feel like a community? Do you feel connected to the people in the town, village, city, neighborhood that you live in? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll go to your calls now. Willem is with us in Colfax. Willem, hello.
Hi. I'm an immigrant to this country from the Netherlands. I immigrated with my family from, we moved to Holland, Michigan. So I'm really familiar with Western Michigan and Grand Rapids and Calvin College and all that, the Christian Reformed Church and its influence on that community. I would say that the rejection of Donald Trump's, or at least to not swallowing as much of it, is partly due to just the nature of Dutch culture. The people in the Netherlands are much more practical and not so susceptible to his con, I guess. And, you know, they're really practical in their solutions, the Netherlands itself. And the difference between the Netherlands and Western Michigan is that I found that the whole culture of the Christian Reformed Church was much more judgmental than the nature of Dutch society today.
Willem, thanks a lot for the call. Well, you were talking about the Dutch influence in the communities you were looking at, Tim. There's some firsthand example. What do you think of what Willem had to say?
I think it's a lot of times it's hard to separate judgmental and tight-knit, and that's one of the problems I talk about in Alienated America. And I do talk about how one of the great ways America handles some of the problems that can come with very close, sometimes insular societies, is that we have so many overlapping layers of society. So if you're living in Holland, Michigan, there's a local government, there's a public school system, there's a Christian school system, there's a church, and you can belong to many of them at the same time. You can, and then there's a civil society that you know, can be run through with the Dutch ethnicity, but also just with sort of Michigan local pride and that sort of thing. And so we have so many different layers. One of the things Alexis Tocqueville said is he was just sort of amazed that Americans seem to be constantly forming little associations of all sorts, and that people would belong to so many of them. So you're not just a member of kind of the church and that sort of thing. So if you're a sociologist and you look at the numbers, the Mormons and the Dutch Reform, both of which can have a reputation of being judgmental or exclusive, they've got great outcomes as far as their children finishing school, getting married, being less likely to have children out of wedlock, less likely to get into drugs. So how to balance the virtues of those tight-knit communities against the potential threats is always a problem. But right now in America, the problem is not that people are too closely knit and tightly wound with their neighbors. The problem is the opposite.
Willem, thanks for the call. Going out to Mike on the line in Lake Mills. Mike, hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call, and this is an important subject. I like the idea of a community. As a matter of fact, I believe it was Hillary Clinton says it takes a...
But we're losing Mike's line. Mike wanted to bring up...
right now is...
Oh, there you are.
We're talking about a church, and we're talking about Christian churches. American communities are not Christian churches. They're buildings of faith, whether it's the Christian faith, whether it's the Islam faith, whether it's the Jewish faith.
I gotcha, Mike, and thanks for that call. And Tim, actually, that takes us back to Oostburg. You've got you addressed some of what Mike's talking about later in the book.
Oh, so I'm glad he said it takes a village. I'm sorry that the audio was cutting out on that, but It Takes a Village is the title of chapter one of my book, because you know, Hillary Clinton wrote a book with that title, and a lot of conservatives sort of ganged up on it because they thought she meant something like it takes big government to raise your kids and that sort of thing. But my argument is, and my wife and I, we have six kids. We do not think we do this alone. We know that it takes neighbors, it takes community, it takes schools, it takes all of that stuff to get through this and raising a kid. But the other point is, America is a very ecumenical country, and so in Oostburg, there again was both this problem that can come with things that can be insular, and the solution of the multiple levels of government, which was when someone wanted to set up the Islamic Center of Sheboygan County. There were members who opposed it because it was unchristian, because, you know, they had fears of terrorism, and even one of the clergy at one of the Reformed churches there had an opposition to it. And then in the end, though, it was up to the civil government to say yes or no. And they said, look, this doesn't violate any of the laws. And even if some of the people there thought, well, we're Christian, this is a Christian town, and in a way that that they thought somehow the nature of their town would be changed by one Islamic center, which was wrong-headed. But even if they had that view, the civil law overrode it, and the Islamic center was set up. And then sort of the coda of that story is one of the Muslim families that was involved in the Islamic center was vacationing out on the lake, and one of their kids disappeared. And the neighbors, all Christian Reformed Christian, you know, Dutch from Oostburg, not only did they lead the search party, they called the imam because they said, wait, if I had a situation like this, I would want my religious leader here. And so they roped them in. So it was a story, not to sort of, the happy ending doesn't diminish the idea that there was bigotry there, but the whole story is a way of showing how America, being a patchwork, allows for lots of little communities that have very distinctive natures to live side by side in peace and have overlapping layers that form these little platoons, that form solidarity, and that's really necessary. And once people start to lack that identity, that's when things start to fall apart. So you look in parts of the country where people don't have strong ethnic, religious, or local sense, and that's where you're seeing the worst outcomes.
Now, Tim, thanks a lot for that call, Mike. Suppose we're in a community that has fallen apart in some way and doesn't have that civil society. Can you put it back together? What would it take?
It's hard to put it back together from nothing. Every individual has to do work to build it up. Civil society doesn't keep going on its own. Community always takes the effort of people who are going to say, this is an important thing to do, and we're going to do it together. But sometimes, so one of the places I go in alienated America is Fayette County, Pennsylvania, south of Pittsburgh. And while Pittsburgh is doing pretty well, the rural places outside of it are not necessarily. And so there's a real question there that I get asked a lot. Should you try to rebuild a town where the public schools have no involvement from the parents, and you'd be the only involved parents, and the local diner has shut down, and the local church has shut down? Should I try to build that up, or should I get up and go? And it's a real difficult question, because the American story, there's sort of two American dreams. One is we all got on boats and came over here and then kept going west. But the other is, as Tocqueville writes, we all sort of settled down and planted roots and dedicated ourselves to where we were. So it is sort of a tricky question of how to balance that. But what I would say is, if you are going to get up and go, I think that what's needed to sort of build the good life for yourself and for other people is, wherever you end up, you plant roots there. So sometimes in sort of a modern capitalistic economy, people think, well, I'm going to go where I need to go as long as it's profitable, as long as I'm getting something from it, and move on. People have this attitude towards business. People have this attitude towards where they live. People have this attitude towards relationships. That's destructive. You have to have relationships, not just transactions. You have to plant roots in places to be able to sort of extract the good life for yourself and help supply it for other people.
Even if there's not a blueprint to do that, are you optimistic that we can move in that direction?
I am, and Augsburg is one of the reasons why. This is a perfectly middle-class town, because in so many places in America, the only places where there are strong communities are among the elites, which is to say highly educated, wealthy people. But that's not the only places. You know, I see it in Salt Lake City. You see it in, if you want a secular example, you see it in a lot of New England towns where the local government, the local people really control a public school, and they're joined together in a joint pursuit of a higher purpose outside of themselves. That's the key. That's what I'm talking about when I talk about community and civil society. I think it is doable. It will take something of a great awakening in civic responsibility. It may take better, newer attitudes towards how we handle technology, how we build the physical shape of communities, not necessarily around cars, but around human beings. But I think it's definitely very doable. If America is good at anything, it's sort of restarting and taking on new challenges.
We'll leave it there, Tim. Thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you.
That's Tim Carney with the Washington Examiner. His new book is Alienated America: Why Some Places Thrive While Others Collapse.